Okay. I'll go ahead and call our meeting to order this morning on February 11th, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
We've got a full house here this morning, and we have a particular reason for that. We usually don't draw this big of a crowd. This is the day that we're going to honor the employees here at Story County with their recognition for their years of service. So I'm going to read down the list. If you're here, you want to wave your hand or stand up, I'll leave that up to you guys.
Stand up, so I can just take a look at it.
We will start with five-year employees. Jeff Zimmerman from Secondary Roads, Jessica Reynolds from the County Attorney's Office, Amanda Roush from the Sheriff's Office, Levi Hansen from the Sheriff's Office, Ryan Weeks from the Sheriff's Office, Kyle Thompson from the Sheriff's Office, Nicholas Lenny from the Sheriff's Office, Dylan Combs from the Sheriff's Office, Russ DeWall from Conservation, Brett Van Horn from Community Services, and Joan Cool from Community Life. 10 years of service, Josh Webster from the Sheriff's Office, Joel Aarons from Information Technologies, Vanessa Borwick from the Treasurer's Office, Alyssa Wignall from the Board of Supervisors, Melinda Vandergast from Community Life, Gary Backus from the Sheriff's Office, Randy Steffler from the Sheriff's Office, and Diane Hobart from the Sheriff's Office. 15 years of service, Scott Derlin from the Engineer, Marcy Hunter from the Sheriff's Office, Kathy Johnson, Community Services, Sarah Sampson, Community Life, Carla Webb, Community Services, Jerry Keyes from Conservation, Darla Ingham from the Board of Supervisors, Amy Yoakum from Conservation, Sheila Mertz, Community Service, Paula Haberman from Information Technologies, Roger Holland from Secondary Roads, Paul Ogden from Secondary Roads, Joel Eichholt from Facilities Management, Darren Moon, the Engineer, Todd Sullivan from Facilities Management, Leanne Harder, Planning and Development, James Mimmer, Secondary Roads, Melissa Spencer, Emergency Management, Amy Peters from the Sheriff's Office, and Dave Toot from Secondary Roads. 20 years of service, Paul Fitzgerald, the Sheriff.
All right.
Man, just in time.
Something else. I think he stood out in the hallway until you got there.
Sue McCaskey from Animal Control. Joan Henders from the Sheriff's Office. Margaret James from our Health Department.
Hi.
Judy Ratchie from Community Life. And Cindy Maxwell from Community Life. 25 years, Peggy Kohler from Community Life, Janet Stoll from the Sheriff's Office, and Artie Baldwin from the Treasurer's Office. 30 years of service, Craig Ferris. Dave, help him up, will you? 35 years, Roger Tendall, Secondary Roads. And 40 years, Jane Page from the Sheriff's Office.
How about that?
Started when she was 16.
Just want to thank everybody for the years of service, and time to get back to work, guys.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me just make a little quick comment. This was the first year that I missed EAC recognition in my 13 years, but traditionally, as you all know, the board and all of the department heads and elected officials so much value and appreciate the work you do. You don't hear that enough. Sometimes the public, of course, expects quality service in which you have been known to give time and time again. But I do think it's important for us to take this little small time to just say a special thank you for your dedication and your service. And we hope that more and more of you will still want to be around to reach that 40-plus years because that, too, is a testament of your dedication to the residents of Story County. So on behalf of myself, as the tenure member here, I just certainly want to publicly thank you again for all of your dedication and service to Story County. We appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I did dress up just for you guys, so I just wanted you to know that.
Okay, next on our agenda is the public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. And I'm guessing nobody's headed for the microphone. Consideration of minutes from 2-4-14.
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second on the claims. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Claims are approved. Looks like we have all items under consent.
No additions, huh? Move approval of the consent agenda as noted.
Second.
Motion and a second on the consent. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That takes us to no public hearing items. Additional items. Discussion of cyber breach notification and insurance coverage and underground fiber optic coverage. Steve Goodhue, Susan Hosher from NAP Tedesco.
Steve, I don't want you to feel bad that the room cleared out.
Morning.
Morning.
Thank you for allowing us to appear on the agenda today to talk about.
If we can get you over here and just make sure the little green light's on when you sit down, you can push that little button.
Thank you again for allowing us to appear on the agenda this morning to talk about what we believe are important insurance coverages for Story County. I'm Steve Goodhue, president and owner of NAP Tedesco Insurance. I'm joined today
by Brian Anderson and Susan Hosher, who are with me here as well. Before I address the memo I just distributed to you, I do want to just say a word of thanks to Story County for the relationship you have with NAP Tedesco Insurance, and we certainly do not take that lightly. We're very grateful for the relationship. As you know, the county is insured with the Iowa Communities Assurance Pool, what we refer to as ICAP. You've been with that pool for a long time. You're recognized as a leading county in and amongst ICAP, and that's really a tribute to you, and it's for a couple reasons. You have a very low experience modification factor, 0.78, as you well know, which is a very good indication of your workers' comp program. You're in the top five of all the counties across the state that are insured through ICAP in terms of workers' compensation experience modification factors. Your loss ratio has historically been extremely low, about 3% or less, and again, that's a recognition of what you all do for work comp and for safety purposes, and it's a real tribute to your staff. I think the Story County Safety Fair we did last fall in cooperation with the county is a good example of this, and just really appreciate your attention to safety and overall best practices on behalf of the county. Today I want to address some general liability items that are not a part of your policy, are a part in some cases not, and the memo in front of you summarizes that. I want to talk about two things. One is fiber optics. Your current policy with ICAP does not include any coverage for any damage you might do to your current fiber optics owned by the county. If you do damage, you should by chance have incur some damage to a third-party system owned by someone else, a fiber optic system owned by the state or someone else, you have coverage. But any fiber optics owned by the county that your staff may inadvertently damage, you do not have any coverage. And so we'd like to suggest that you endorse your current policy with $250,000 of fiber optics coverage. Fiber optics can be very expensive to repair or replace, and that comes at an additional cost of $500 annually. This would be subject to a deductible in the event that you did incur damage. The other item we wanted to talk about today is cyber liability, and this is a very hot topic in insurance and across the country right now. We've got a lot of clients who are expressing concern, both private sector and public sector clients who are expressing concerns about cyber liability. And you only need to say target once to understand that can be a lot of breaches on systems. We have a colleague who owns an insurance agency in Ames who had a breach on their system the other day through CenturyLink. And you hear about a lot of breaches on both financial records and databases and things of that nature across the country. And most recent statistics we've seen is about 72% of all small to mid-sized businesses, and I'd include Story County in that as well, are subject to or at risk of some sort of breach on your system. Your current coverage with ICAP includes up to $15 million worth of coverage for what we'd call cyber liability. So in the event of a breach on your computer system or your communications network that may result in some sort of unauthorized transmission or dissemination of taxpayer financial records, data, or other information is covered, again, up to $15 million. The piece that we wanted to address today is what we call cyber breach. And you've got some coverage under your current policy with that, but cyber breach would pay for the reasonable cost to notify taxpayers or citizens in the event that you were impacted by a breach on your financial records or your data system. You have $50,000 worth of coverage under your current program. We'd recommend increasing this to a maximum of $250,000. It's an annual premium cost of $1,000. It would provide some form of credit monitoring service to taxpayers and others that may be impacted in any other reasonable expenses. We're under the impression that as we hear about breaches across the country, the average cost to notify a customer or a taxpayer is a little over $200. It's about $214. And I'm going to guess Target spent a lot more than that notifying their debit card and credit card holders across the country. So if you think about $200 per citizen in the event there were a breach, $50,000 would not go very far. So again, would recommend increasing that cyber breach coverage to $250,000. And increasing your fiber optics coverage to $250,000. One is at an annual cost of $500, the other one at $1,000. So I hope you'll look favorably on these recommendations. I'd be happy to take questions on either one of those. And again, just want to thank you for the relationship we have with Story County.
Is there a deductible on the cyber breach?
I think there is.
$5,000 on the deductible. And again, $10 on the fiber optics.
Yeah, Steve, I just wanted to step in and tell you guys how much we appreciate the county's relationship with NAP Tedesco. You have, in my tenure on the board, you've done a phenomenal job keeping us informed, bringing items like this. I'd never think about insuring fiber optic cable or the idea of a breach on our security system, but the reality is that's the reality. And so we're appreciative of the relationship, and it's really nice for us to be able here in Story County to do business with a locally owned company, and so we really appreciate you guys. And it looks to me like this is just a discussion item. I would recommend we get this on our agenda of consideration as recommended by NAP Tedesco for us to deal with at next week's meeting.
Jessica, do you have anything to add?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I may just alert you that the National Association of Counties has gone on record. A year ago, we held our first national cybersecurity symposium in Omaha, and it was attended by people all across the country, the Justice Department, so forth, and we're having a second conference in April, also in Omaha, and I plan to attend as well as Barbara Steinbrenner, our IT director, and primarily it is to make sure that we are understanding what's happening out there, what things we can do at the local level to try to give some level of protection, even though we know that, you know, people in this particular arena is far more sophisticated, and you may have something in place today that will be obsolete in a short period of time with what's out there. But I do appreciate you bringing this again to our attention, and it's just like Supervisor Sanders said, just something that the average person never stops and thinks about. But we're certainly in that digital age today, and we're doing more and more based on you know, our use of the internet and web-based information that's being deployed all over the world. So I think this is certainly something that we want to take a real close look at. So as you say, this will come back to us a little later in a formal
I think since it's just a discussion item today, I think we need to get it on the agenda as consideration. I would ask that any deductibles, just the fine points of each one of these recommendations. If you guys could just get that to us so we can get it on the agenda for consideration, that'd be great.
To Jessica, and we'd be happy to come back and answer any questions you may have.
Yeah. Sure do appreciate you.
Good. Thank
you.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you so much.
Good. I'm looking at my planning director back there. There's no high sign, so we're going to pull item two under additional items. We don't have the paperwork that we need for that from the contractor. Item three, consideration of preliminary subdivision plat of Cameron Estates located on certain lands under the ownership of Cameron Farms, LLC, Section 19, Franklin Township, Charlie, from Planning and Development.
Hi, Charlie.
How are you guys doing? Well, good morning. As you had mentioned, this is case SUB 1213. It's the Cameron Estates subdivision. This is the preliminary plat consideration. The property owner of the particular property we're reviewing is Cameron Farms, LLC. Property location, it's about 68 acres of land north of Cameron School Road, east of 505th, and south of 190th Street. Current zoning, actually that should say AR, Agricultural Residential, that was approved by the board a few weeks ago. Currently the land is being used for row crop production and is classified as an agricultural use, and the fringe plan does designate the area as a rural residential area. As I mentioned, this is a subdivision request for a major subdivision, which would include 47 lots, 6 outlots, and 2 street lots in the AR residential district. On preliminary subdivision plats, the Planning and Zoning Commission does provide the Board of Supervisors with a recommendation. And we did want to mention that based off our 2080 agreement that's been adopted between the City of Ames and City of Gilbert, the only jurisdiction that is reviewing the subdivision plat is Story County. Map up here above kind of gives you a general vicinity of the area. It's the blue hashed out area here, same again as that rezoning request that we reviewed. Cameron School Road is just to the south here. And this kind of gives you an idea of the way the subdivision will be developed. This is the preliminary plat that has been submitted. Shows the 47 lots, 6 outlots, and the 2 street lots, and I'll get into that a little bit more in depth here. Just some comments that we made in the staff report, and I just kind of want to outline some of the more important ones. First of all, regarding the easements on the property, as this preliminary plat does show, there are no easements being proposed at this time. We did note that the plat does lack the required public utility easements. However, the applicant has said that those will be provided with the final plat. We had a regulation change last year that reduced the size of public utility easements from 15 feet to 10 feet, so now they can fit within the setbacks of each yard. So there shouldn't be too much of a concern in not having those shown on the preliminary plat, again, as they're going to be falling within setbacks anyways and not within a buildable area. According to some of the GIS records that we have, there is possibly a Xenior water line located on the west and north ends of this property. However, nobody's really exactly sure where that water line is right now. We did pull some documentation from the recorder's office that shows an easement document for this property dedicating to Xenia an easement for a water pipeline on this property. However, we did find one for the property across the street as well, too. So, again, it's not really known 100% sure where that is, but based off any development that will be done, the Iowa One calls will have to be done on this property, and that water line will be shown. Just based off some of the documentation that we did have in that easement document, the water line, if it is placed on this property, it shouldn't be located with any of the buildable areas on the lots along 505th, so there really shouldn't be too much of a concern of the development encroaching on that water line. But we will note here in a little bit, too, any development agreement that does come out should probably cover how mitigation of that water line will be handled and cover the one calls that will be done on that as well. There were covenants submitted with the subdivision. We have received the latest draft of those covenants on January 29th of 2014. We did note that there are no conflicts with any of Story County's ordinances on those covenants. Few notes we did want to make on them, that there is a covenant that does call for the preservation and repair of existing tile systems on the site. More or less it says that if any time any of the development on the site does encroach on a tile line, that the tile line needs to be rerouted and upped one size. So that should handle any disturbance with the existing tile system that's on the property. There is a covenant that does deal with septic system maintenance. However, the Environmental Health Department has requested a little bit stronger language on there. If you recall the Oaks subdivision that we did, there was a particular covenant in the Oaks subdivision that Margaret Janes really did like, and she's asking that the applicant incorporate that particular covenant into their covenants. And then talking with the applicant, I think they do plan on doing that. All utilities and fire departments have acknowledged their ability to serve this development. Based off those covenants, the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation does ask for a final draft of the covenants to be submitted with the final plat, so we can take one last review, one last look at those covenants and make sure there are going to be no conflicts with our ordinances. And as I did mention, the Code of Ordinance does require the developer to enter into a development agreement providing for the installation of all improvements in the subdivision. Usually those agreements do outline erosion control measures, the removal of significant trees on the property. There is a little bit of area on this property that does have some trees. And as I had mentioned before, I think staff would like to see it include the location of the existing Xenia water line. Staff did note that current weather conditions will not allow for soil borings to be done, and as such, a proper site evaluation for septic systems cannot be completed at this time. However, according to the health department, soils on this site do not raise any major concerns for the site's ability to provide adequate septic systems. And lastly, we did note that if conditions do allow, staff would prefer to have that site evaluation done prior to approval of the final plat. However, if the soil conditions do not allow for that to happen, the proposed development agreement shall detail the site evaluation that will be done for this development. Looking at the new roads that we'll be putting in, the subdivision does include the dedication of three new public roads. The primary street is named Harvest Road and will provide access to the site from Cameron School Road and 505th. According to current traffic counts, Cameron School Road is an existing paved road that carries approximately 2,200 vehicles per day. That's according to the 2011 DOT counts, and 505th Avenue is the gravel road that carries approximately 80 vehicles per day. The other roads are Windrose Lane, which provides access from 505th to Harvest Road, and then Cobblestone Court, which is a cul-de-sac, and that provides access from Harvest Road. We did note that there are no conflicts with any of those names on the existing streets in Story County. The new roads will provide a 50-foot right-of-way with a 22-foot roadway, and 4-foot shoulders would provide for the 10-foot ditches. Cobblestone Court does provide access up to 7 lots and is approximately 670 feet long, so that does fit within our requirements. The circular portion of that cul-de-sac will have a 65-foot radius right-of-way and a 45-foot radius paved portion. Again, that does meet all Story County standards. And all the street lots will consume approximately 8% of the site. One particular area of code that we wanted to point out that the Code of Ordinance does require a 60-foot right-of-way from the center line of existing roads that shall be deeded to the county for potential future improvements. However, the ordinance does say that the right-of-way width may be modified with approval of the county engineer. This plat only does dedicate 50 feet, and that amount was recommended by Darren Moon in an email back in last November, and that was due to the flat terrain and shallow ditches. Just showing here real quick on the subdivision, Harvest Road, again, the main road that will serve this, comes off Cameron School Road, goes up to 505th Avenue here. Cobblestone Court is the cul-de-sac, and then Windrose Lane comes off 505th Avenue and connects to Harvest Lane. Common open space with the subdivision does include approximately 8.91 acres of outlots, which is about 13.05% of the subdivision when you calculate that off gross acreage. And we do require 15% of the proposed residential subdivision of 10 lots or more to be dedicated for common open space. The problem is our ordinance does not outline if that should be done based off gross acreage or net acreage, the difference being that traditionally, if you would do it on gross acreage, you would include the road right-of-way in that calculation. If you do it on net, you take out the road right-of-way. The applicant has done it based off a net calculation, and the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation that is going forward is recommending that it does be calculated off the net acreage. So kind of the numbers that I have up here really don't apply because traditionally we've always done it at the staff level from gross acreage, but doing it from net acreage I think we see probably is a little bit more appropriate than doing it from the gross acreage, and the Planning and Zoning Commission did agree with that. Going off some stormwater management control strategies, the code requires that they better replicate natural watershed hydrology, water quality, controlling runoff discharge volume, frequency, and quality. Stormwater will be directed toward the road ditches and the outlets and will continue to outlet in its current areas at a decreased rate, according to the applicant. Most of the site will drain towards outlots A and E through surface drainage and proposed roadway ditches. There is some surface drainage that would outlet into a tributary on the north side of the subdivision by outlot F, and on the north side of outlot C. I'll show you those here in a second. Outlot B is a proposed depression that will be turned into a wooded wetland and will also take some of the surface drainage. Culverts on site will be designed to handle a 100-year storm event. Again, most of the drainage, as I said, will go through outlots A and E, which are these two outlots here. It'll flow in through the roadway ditches, and there's a map here that'll show you that in a little bit. There is some drainage that will go off the site into this area here, as well as this area right here, and there will be some grading done to allow some stormwater to flow into this area right here, which will be planted in that wooded wetland area. Map here kind of shows the existing elevation on site, and you kind of see some of the high spots down here, and you can see where the site currently still drains into those three areas. Map right here, if it was a little bit larger, you'd probably be able to see it, but it shows kind of the drainage ways through the ditches and some of the rearage on the lot. But again, most of it going into this area here, a little bit into this area, and a little bit up into that area. We did note that lot 47 is considered a flag lot, and flag lots shall be avoided wherever possible. However, lot 47 is configured this way because of proposed outlot A. And when I show you it on the plat here, based off anybody that's driving by lot 47, it would never appear to be a flag lot. So I think from staff standpoint, we're okay going forward on that one.
Explain what do you mean by flag lot?
Let me show you here.
A different term.
Yeah, lot 47 is this lot right here, and you can kind of see it flags out onto the road right away. We had another issue with the flag lot over here that they did fix, but this one right here, we've always been of the opinion that it's just kind of one that needs to be there. But again, you can kind of, it almost just provides a flagpole out to the street more or less. So, but again, anybody driving down there, you're going to have this open area right here, and it's almost going to appear that it's not even a flag lot. So. Looking at shared access easements, there are four lots that will share two access easements off 505th Avenue. I think the board will recall there was some concern early on in this process that with the 300-foot separation distance, it was going to be hard to kind of arrange the lots along 505th to meet that. So they have provided two shared access easements, which do meet code. The applicant also has provided their proposed phasing plan, which proposes that this site will be developed in three phases. I'll show you that here in a second. We did want to remind everybody that approval of a preliminary plat is usually valid for 1 year. However, the applicant can ask for proposed extensions onto that. So if the phasing does take longer than the 1 year, we'll probably be back here at some point in the future asking for extensions on the preliminary plat, and we'll kind of make those decisions as we go. Phasing plan, that's where those colors come in. You can see the pinkish area will be phase one, the teal area down here, phase two, everything to the north will be phase three. Looking at the interagency review comments, the ones that come to note, again, from County Engineer Darren Moon, he notes from a roads perspective, keeping the accesses. This plan is the one that's preferred. The lot numbers have changed a little bit in the process, so those are a little bit inaccurate, but again, just more or less stating that the way it is along 505th Avenue is the way that is preferred from his office. And then Margaret Janes did have some concern, again, about the septic systems and how those are going to be handled, and I think we've kind of outlined that through this presentation. We did want to note that there is no floodplain on this property, so there are no concerns with that. And lastly, we did send notification requests, or notifications to property owners regarding this meeting on February 4th. So, looking at the Planning and Zoning Commission's recommendation, they did recommend conditional approval. The conditions mainly dealt with how the site evaluation for the septic systems will be handled, and that was based off Margaret Jane's comments. And in the discussion, again, as we noted, that the commission wanted to make sure that the board knew that they were recommending approval based off using the net acreage on that open space and not the gross acreage. So with that, your four conditions are listed on the screen above, and if there are any questions of me, I would be happy to answer them at this time.
Charlie, I had a question about one of the conditions. I thought I heard you say in your presentation that clearly we can't get in and do the boring to check the soil right now, and I thought I heard you say that in the event we can't get in and do it, the developer has agreed to put forth a full plan of how to be dealt with. But I notice as one of the recommended conditions, it says we will do it, and if the weather doesn't allow us to do it, we're going to postpone things until it's done. Can you reconcile those two for me? One of them I thought I heard you say, if we can't get it done, we just have to have a plan. The other one said, if we can't get it done, we're going to postpone.
And I think it means that they're going to postpone doing the site evaluation, not postpone the final plat.
And that's what I want to be clear on.
Language is important is what he's addressing, definitely. Because it's people will interpret it differently.
Yep, nope, it's postponing until they can actually get out there with soil conditions.
But
and
we
do
won't
it.
Postpone a final plat.
Nope. Okay. And then it later says that and outlined in the development agreement. So what that was saying, that either we have the site evaluation on looking at the final plat, and if we don't, there'll be a development agreement that's tied with the final plat that will outline exactly how they're going to do that.
All right, and let's just make sure the record's really, really clear on that.
Nope, good idea.
Get through it.
And, I mean, this is probably hypothetical, and it just I assume, but most of the homes in this development, this is probably going to be in the Gilbert School District. Are we futuristic thinking that this could have some other road use factors that will come into the county over time? And obviously I know that's kind of hard to predict, but I'm thinking of other arterial developments and other things that Cameron School Roads and the other existing roads right now is adequate to handle increased traffic based on the proposed subdivision.
Yeah, kind of rule of thumb that we've always gone off is for each new single-family dwelling that's placed out there, you can almost predict approximately 10 vehicles per trips per day that's going to be added. So with 47 lots, approximately 470, assuming they all take the same route, obviously there's a lot of things that can factor into that. There's been discussion throughout this entire process of paving 505th possibly, looking at 190th, and I know the board's well aware of all those that have taken place. And again, those conversations have taken place, and I think it comes down to a funding mechanism and how that's going to be paid for. But definitely, I mean, you've got to assume that there'll be some people in the subdivision that don't take Cameron School Road, try to cut through the gravel. It's just going to
well,
be
and the, but the first thing that's got to be determined, and this is on Darren's plate right now, for us to work through, but something that was mentioned several weeks ago is the possibility that 190th not remain a through street at some point with that bridge right there and the fact that it gets flooded all the time. And so it seems to me that the first domino that we need to figure out is what 190th looks like. There's really three possibilities. One, you can leave 190th the way it is, and we're going to continue to deal with the issues that we have out there. 505th will, in fact, become more of a cut-through, and we'd have to recognize that. We could close 190th down and make it a dead end going back there into Prairie Moon, and also make it a dead end coming back into this subdivision and the few properties that are around there. Or we could go the other route and reconstruct 190th, take it all the way through to County Line Road, and make it more of a major thoroughfare. I mean, I think those are the three possibilities, Darren, unless I'm missing something. And what I would ask, I know it's on your radar, I'd ask that you bring us back some recommendations and further discussion as soon as possible, because that starts to set the dominoes up for a lot of other things, up to and including Grant/Gretton/530th, which runs off of 190th over there further to the east. And so Wayne, I think it's really good that you brought it up.
Right.
I don't know that it's part of this conversation for the plats,
but
it's something that we've got to work through as quickly as we can.
Right. Good point.
Charlie, you had mentioned the three new public streets. Can you talk just a minute about maintenance? Who's responsible for the maintenance?
Yeah, typically the covenants will cover the maintenance of those roads, so the Homeowners Association will be responsible for the maintenance. However, they are dedicated to the public. Story County doesn't take ownership. It's just that they're dedicated to the public. They're considered public roads but maintained privately.
Okay. Looking for a little action.
Yeah, so I'd move the option that says we accept the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission. I do want to note the conversation about the soils and the fact that we're not going to postpone anything. That's my motion.
And I'll make sure, because I think I took those right out of our Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, I'll just make sure that we do clarify that in the minutes, too.
I think that's important. I will second the motion.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to approve the preliminary plat with the conditions that were set forth by the zoning board. So any further discussion? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The preliminary plat has been approved. Okay. Thank you, Charlie. Consideration of Resolution 1468 to increase state fuel tax rates to the fee for new registration and allocate new funding to go to the time, should be, I think, 21 fund. Yeah, this is a resolution that was sent to us by the Association of County Supervisors, and we're going to turn it over to Wayne because he's a little more familiar with this.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this has been something that have been talked about for the last several years, and the Iowa Association of County Supervisors, in conjunction with County Engineers Association, have really been looking at how we can address the needed dollars to improve our deteriorating roads and bridges. And obviously the fuel tax revenue is the most feasible and fairest way to generate additional dollars that is so vitally needed. And over the last couple of years, this has been a topic that has been talked about. It's been discussed down at the legislature. For some political reasons, it didn't gain nearly as much traction. This year, we're seeing some movement taking place that is somewhat more favorable. The governor did commission one of the staffers to bring forth a recommendation of some possible alternatives. And while that was just to start the discussion, I think it has prompted some major action. So I'd like to just share with you a document that was submitted by the Iowa Association of Counties Board of Directors. On January 24th, 2014, the Board of Directors of the Association approved a resolution stating the support for a fuel tax increase. Road funding is one of ISAC's top priorities and was approved by the full membership. Iowa roads and bridges are vital components for the continual growth of the state's economy, and every road jurisdiction is struggling to adequately maintain its portion of the road system. The cost of building and maintaining roads continue to increase, while the user fee per gallon of gasoline has not increased since 1989. In addition to general inflation, Iowa's road maintenance issues have been exacerbated by harsh winters, floods, and heavy equipment uses. But due to the shortfall in road funding, counties have turned to bonding in order to provide critical funding for maintenance of roads and bridges. These bonds are repaid with property tax revenues, contrary to the state's goal of reducing property tax expenditures throughout the state. Additionally, the use of bonds failed to capture funding from the out-of-state vehicle users that's impacting Iowa roads. So the per-gallon fuel tax is the most equitable way to charge for the use of public roads and bridges, and 20% to 30% of this revenue is generated from out-of-state travelers and businesses, as noted by ISAC President Harlan Hansen. So ISAC actually supports a phased-in 10-cent increase in the per-gallon fuel and ongoing evaluation of long-term sustainable transportation solutions. Mr. Chair, I would just like to ask our county engineer, Darren Moon, who is here, to maybe just comment just briefly from the county engineer's perspective. I think the supervisors have certainly been briefed about our maintenance issues. And we recall a few weeks ago, Darren presented to us actual photographs of the deterioration and damage to many of our bridges, and we're really going to have to start looking at what's going to happen in the future if we don't have some additional dollars. And he may can also comment a little bit regarding some of the ongoing discussions right now with the state legislators and the governor's office through the Engineers Association. So, County Engineer Darren Moon.
Thanks, Wayne. As first of all, I want to thank the board for considering this resolution. A lot of counties are in the process of doing this right now, and a lot of counties are passing it. I realize that any kind of endorsing any kind of a tax increase in this day and age is a difficult thing to do, but I would stress this is for the most basic essential services that are out there. This is for road improvements. And we're not asking to improve or expand our road system, hire new employees. This is simply to maintain the system we have now, and it we're not able to do that with the current funding stream. Like Wayne said, the last increase was in 1989. Construction and material costs have more than doubled since then, and so the funding just isn't keeping pace. To give you an idea what a 10-cent tax increase would do for Story County, keep in mind that 10 cents funds the state roads and the city roads and county, so it's three-pronged. But Story County would see additional $700,000 a year with the full 10 cents. The current bill right now phases that in over 3 years, so it would be 3 years before we'd reach that. But that $700,000 what we'd be looking at with the full 10 cents. I guess I'd comment, Wayne, you were the board member that was here when we bonded about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We were put in a situation, we had a 9-mile stretch of pavement, S-27 going through McCallsburg, that was in such rough condition, we were to the point we were going to have to close it. Bonding was really our only option. We had no other way to do it. That's not the best way to fund roads. The fuel tax is it's the closest thing we have as a user fee in the tax system right now, and that's the way to go. Bonding's not the way to go, but a lot of counties have no other option. So that put us, that bought us some time. Especially with the payments. Bridges a little bit more difficult to keep up with, but that bought Story County some time, but there's other counties that don't have that bonding capacity, so they're not able to do that, so they're really struggling. But like I said, right now there's a bill proposed to phase it in over 3 years, and our association's met with the governor personally. It's an election year. Right now he's not fully on board with it. Anything we can do pass that message on would help, so I think this is a good step.
Yes, I believe currently right now the latest communication I received, it's House Study Bill 514 that is being discussed and has been brought before the it has not yet been brought before the full House Transportation Committee, and so there's a lot of behind the scenes discussions and things going on, and while there's a significant support, a lot of the legislators are wanting to know if the governor will signal some support for this if it's actually passed and brought to his desk to sign. And so I think there's going to be considerable discussion, and the question is whether or not it will actually come up for a full vote before the House. They're still a little short in the Senate yet of getting the total number of members who will vote yes, but at least we have several bills. I'll just mention, I won't read what each of them are, but if you, anyone who's out there looking, there's Senate file 2042 is out there authorizing a 2% general fund revenue that would be transferred from the road use tax fund. There's another Senate file 2068 that requires the rate of excise taxes on motor fuel to be adjusted based on the change in the consumer price index. And there's Senate file 2072 to appropriate $200 million from the general fund to the road use tax for 2014-15. And these funds would be directed to counties, which would really be much-needed help. And there's House File 2147 that calls for the transfer of up to $220 million from the Highway Economic Emergency Fund to the road use tax fund. And in certain situations, this also would increase the excise fuel tax. And the last one that is being floating around right now is House File 2149 that calls for an excise on compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas used as fuel for the equivalent. So a lot of things are being discussed. Obviously, we don't want to have a situation where we have a Minnesota bridge collapse before we get the legislators to actually take action. So I think this is buying some time. I think it was suggested by ISAC a few years ago that had the legislators implemented a 1 cent increase over the 10-year period, we would have the funds necessary to make a lot of the needed repairs. But now, you know, we're having to look at an additional three, and perhaps four. And I did some calculation based on my usage, since I don't have the most fuel-efficient vehicle. But the average consumer should expect somewhere between $44 to $50 additional at the 3% increase. Now, if you have a higher capacity vehicle like mine, you know, it's probably going to be double. So I figured it's going to cost me anywhere between $85 and $90 because I have to fill up at least twice a week with all the trips that I take to and from Des Moines. But I think when consumers realize that...
Wayne, is that per year, your estimate?
Yes, per year.
I think it's going to cost you another $100 a year.
Yes, right, per year. Thank you for the clarification. So I think the it's important for the taxpayers to weigh whether or not, if we have to go to bonding, is it something that they want to fall back on property taxes rather than being able to capture the funds that would be available from all the users of the system? So this is why I'm asking this board to join other counties in support of this road use tax resolution in cooperation with the Iowa County Engineers Association. So.
Yeah, the reality is, and I know the number makes Darren queasy, but there is somebody from DOT that is quoting a number of 45,000 years to replace all the bridges in Iowa. The reality here in Story County, I think Darren looked at this. Darren, and I believe you feel like it's more like 150 years here in Story County on current funding models to replace all our bridges. Either way, I mean, you get to a certain point, you go, okay, either one's... One's more impressive number, but they're both unsustainable. My view is roads and infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, is a primary function of government. It is one of the main reasons that we exist. You guys know I take my role as a member of the Board of Supervisors much more importantly than the fact that I happen to be part of the Republican Party who absolutely opposes any kind of tax increases, and specifically a fuel tax increase. That said, bonding is not the way to do this. I was highly critical. Wayne, I was highly critical of you when on this board Story County bonded $9 million. The reality is that was the only option you had. Wasn't a good option, but it was the only option you have. I also view that all spending is a tax, and I know the three of us sitting here, our responsibility is to maintain these things, and so we're going to find a way to maintain it. And Wayne, you said it. The choice is not whether we're going to spend the dollars to maintain Story County. It's, is it part of our property taxes, or is there more of a user fee, which I'm much more in favor of. That's the libertarian streak in me. I'm much more in favor of people using it. So I struggle with some of this resolution. Ultimately, I'm going to support it, and I'm going to tell you how I get to supporting it. The last line is, and be it also resolved, the Iowa State Association of County Supervisors and the County Board of Story County Board of Supervisors support the ongoing evaluation of creative supplemental solutions to increased road use tax fund funding. That's where I am. Whether it's the fuel tax
right
or not, I like user fees. The reality is we don't have enough dollars right now. So I'm going to support the resolution. I struggle with, is an extra 10-cent fuel tax the right one to go with? But that, Paul, that's where I come down.
Okay. So in a nutshell, what we've been asked to do is to pass this resolution. We've been asked by the State Association of County Supervisors to pass this resolution showing that this board is in support of the it's like Rick read that last sentence, ongoing evaluation and creative supplemental solutions to increase the road use tax fund. So if that is in fact the case, we would need a motion.
I would move resolution 1468 that the Board of Supervisors go on record in support of the increase of the state fuel tax rates increase for fees as allocated here in this resolution.
I will second that that approval. Is there any further discussion?
No, and I just again want to thank Darren and the County Engineers Association for all of their hard work and helping us. And one of the suggestions that I would wonder, Darren, some of the pictures and the things that you showed, is this possible that we may be able to periodically put some of these on our website so residents of Story County could actually go and see some of the presentations that you've shared? And you shared this with the township officials the other day. I thought it was extremely very helpful in helping us get the message out as to why, you know, we are considering this at this time.
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll do that.
Good. Okay, Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Sanders.
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 1468 is approved.
Yep. Good. Okay. Thank you.
Down to, let's see, no agency reports, no departmental reports. Looks like we're down to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Yes, I met yesterday briefly with Delb Joe Roth on our regular meeting, and primarily we just talked about report, the 2080 agreement that is still being talked about at the state regarding our mental health commission and the governing board. And I believe Deb is planning to communicate with Assistant County Attorney Jessica Reynolds to take a look at what we submitted, and the admin team is planning to meet, I think, this Friday, and they will go through the list of recommendations that is being proposed that our governing board consider. And then they will make a presentation to the governing board as well as to the Board of Supervisors regarding the 2080. But I am assuming that there are about 10 different items that they have made some suggestions on. We think it will probably be mostly wordsmithing type of things because many of them are already involved in our management plan. But they want a little bit more accountability in terms of the governing board's oversight as to how the funds are going to be able to deal with and so forth. So that was where most of our discussion centered yesterday. And you'll be hearing more information in the next few days.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, two things. One, I attended the Story County Conservation Board meeting last night, and along with Steve Carter, who is head of the research park at Iowa State, made a presentation to them about the possibility of the expansion in the research park and what Story County's conservation's role could be in that. That's something that I've mentioned in these board meetings to you guys a couple times that I've been working on with the Iowa State Research Park. And depending on where the conversation goes with conservation, I would think you guys could expect it to come before us at some point. Second one was I went over to McCallsburg last night. It was actually negative 17 as I drove down Main Street in McCallsburg to go to the city council meeting, and got there and learned that they had postponed the city council meeting to Wednesday night because Wally Loney, our good friend, is in the hospital. He's actually in the hospital here in Nevada, so I just want to send out our good thoughts and wishes to Wally.
Absolutely. Oldest mayor in Iowa.
Well, maybe in the country.
Maybe.
I know.
I had a pretty productive watershed meeting last Thursday. I think it's probably our largest crowd that we've had at one of those. We're starting to generate some interest. We had a group there from Iowa State that's also involved in a in a three-year study of the watershed that's done through a grant from the university. So we're going to work together with that group. We've got a couple of meetings planned coming up in the future with landowners and producers, and then just residents in the watershed to get input from them. So that's it for me. Next is public forum number two, comments from the public. On items not on this agenda, the board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. Nobody moving towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
This afternoon at 3 o'clock, I will be attending the SERPA sub-allocation subcommittee meeting in Des Moines. We're taking a look at the funding formula that some proposed changes have been brought by, and at our last SERPA meeting, we appointed a subcommittee made up of a couple supervisors, representatives, and a couple representatives from the county engineers group, as well as a representative from the DOT. And so we will be discussing that and then bringing forth a recommendation back to the SERPA board body at a later time to vote on the funding methodology that is being proposed. So that's at 3 o'clock in Des Moines, and I'll that's about it.
So just one short one for me. I will be delivering the county's portion of the State of the Community Address on Thursday evening at City Hall at 7, courtesy of the League of Women Voters. Don't be late.
Okay.
And next, we have a closed session request from the county attorney, Jessica Mills, assistant county attorney, and 5-year and 11-month employee.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 20.17, the county attorney's office respectfully requests that the Board of Supervisors go into closed session regarding strategy meeting of ourselves as a public employer, relative to the command staff bargaining unit.
Okay.
Motion to go into
closed. Second, I would move that we go into closed session as recommended by Assistant County Attorney Jessica Reynolds.
Second.
Motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Two? Aye. We'll take a couple-minute break and then
record
move
show
session.
The motion at 9:58.
Ready? Okay. We are back in open session at 11:20. And I would look to the board for action.
I'd move that the board accepts the negotiated union agreement with PPME Local 2003. I would like to note one thing in here, and that is the compensation model that actually freezes a couple of classifications and gives a little higher amount to a couple other classifications was proposed by the union.
I will second the motion.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot, aye. It's been approved.
Thank you.
Finally,
move adjournment.
Second. Second. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned. Thanks, Jess.
Well.
Ames play tonight?
Yeah, in Ottumwa.
Oh, no, that's too far. I may go up to Gilbert and see Jack play. I hear they playing. Yeah. Yeah. Give or take.